the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast. This is Taz, and today we have a special guest.
Hi, I'm Randa Jarar.
Randa, welcome to the show.
Hi, welcome to me.
We have a special guest today because Zara couldn't make it. She is doing her
rocking it
amazing stage show, live show
on behalf of all Muslims
up in the Bay Area,
San Francisco.
We're so proud of her.
So proud. I think she's almost sold out of her tickets.
I know. It's so amazing.
Yeah.
If you're there, I hope you saw it. If you're not there, you should go see it, and you should be regretting not going to see it. I've seen all of Zara's jokes 5 times at least over the course of all these years.
Yeah.
It's funny. It's worth it. I'm very proud of her.
It's super funny. It's unique. It's really necessary, I think.
Super necessary.
Yeah.
And so in her stead, we have Randa.
Yes! I will try to be funny.
For people who don't know who you are, how would you describe yourself?
I could describe myself like the way that people who hate me describe me, or I could describe myself like some of my favorite hate mail things. I've been called a camel cunt, which I would love to be like the name of my memoir, but I don't think my editor would be into it.
It's a good name.
I'm a fiction writer primarily. I also write nonfiction. I've written a novel and a collection of short stories. I teach creative writing at Fresno State, and I am also someone who likes to talk shit and cause problems on
yes,
social media.
Yes, our favorite kind.
Yay.
For longtime listeners of Good Muslim, Bad Muslim, you know that we've given Randa a Good Muslim Award in the past.
Yeah.
And then
that was a really beautiful day when I found that out.
And then we stalked you, and then I found you on Instagram, and I was like, Renda's in L.A. I need to make her my friend.
Totally. Me too. I was like, oh, my God.
And then we chased – sorry, and I chased Renda down.
To this neighborhood.
Yeah.
We're in the same neighborhood. I love that.
And then we became friends, and now she's on our podcast, which is how I feel like I want all of the Good Muslim Awards to happen. Like, I want to give Good Muslim Awards, and then I want them to become my friends.
Absolutely. I would be so naughty. I would be giving them to, like, people I thought were sexy.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Well, we haven't really done that. We've been giving mostly the Good Muslim Awards to women because I feel like women don't get enough platform.
Yeah.
But women can also be sexy and
oh,
you
yeah.
can still chase them down.
I wonder what Zara's doing. Zara's like the buy one. She's
I know.
Like, oh, yeah, yeah, they're this totally one. Just
totally.
An honorable reason I'm giving people these awards.
I love the idea of giving awards to Muslim people who usually don't get awards because,
totally.
I don't know, I feel like that's necessary.
I agree.
And I'm so glad that you're on our show. And we've been having a lot of fun since you came to LA, which I'm really excited to jump into and talk about.
Yes.
Eid Mubarak.
Eid Mubarak.
We just finished the month of Ramadan. I've been really stressed trying to get back into things post-Ramadan.
Yeah.
I got really sick the week after Ramadan. Then I was just like, okay, I need to get back into being healthy and whatevers.
Yeah.
And I got, like, really upset by my family because I was spending so much time with them over Eid.
Yeah.
Which always happens. But how was your Eid?
My Eid was really interesting because I was in Kuwait. So I went to Kuwait the last 4 days of Ramadan.
That's amazing.
Or 5 days of Ramadan. Yeah, it was really interesting.
Were the stores open all night?
Yeah. So stores were open mostly or only at night. At one point, I was not fasting. I was on my period and driving with my mom. And I started drinking water in the car. And she said, oh, my God, put that away immediately. We could get pulled over.
What?
Yes.
But.
Yeah.
But women are excused.
Well, apparently you're not supposed to.
But men can't see it, apparently.
No. They can't, which is, you know, that was another thing. It was really interesting after Eid going out and like hanging out in public spaces and seeing women eating and, you know, forgetting that because I grew up in Kuwait,
mm-hmm.
but I'd forgotten how women with niqab have to like kind of pull their mm-hmm. abaya away to eat. And I was like, that makes sense. Like if you're in a car and you're on your period and you're drinking water, if you're like, you know, covered, then maybe no one can see you. Yeah.
I remember. So I don't know if you know this, but we lived in Saudi Arabia for a short amount of time.
Yeah.
So we were in Jubail, which was really close to Kuwait. And so we were there in the 90s, early 90s, like 92, 93. And I just like remember when it came to eating and being a Muslim woman, any woman, just being a woman in that city, like – the men had seating places and the
yeah.
women had to sit on the sidewalk or, like, eat outside because there was no place for women to be. be. But I mean, I imagine things have changed since then.
I don't really know about Saudi Arabia, but in Kuwait, it's not like that. Yeah. I mean, women are everywhere. They're all over the place.
That's amazing.
Like eating and shopping and going in the water.
Really?
Yeah. I saw definitely women in burkinis going in the water.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Honestly, it was really great. I mean, I kind of kept thinking to myself, why don't I live here?
Really?
Yeah. Like, just like, why don't I live somewhere where I'm not a minority?
Right.
Like, where it's just everyone around me is Muslim.
And yeah.
But then, of course, like, the longer I stayed,
yeah,
the longer I realized, oh, shit, like, Shia are definitely oppressed here. There's only one kind of Muslim that is considered cool, and that's a Wahhabi Sunni Muslim and a man and a straight man.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a good reality check to remember, like, oh, wait, no. Everywhere actually kind of sucks.
What was your Eid day like?
Eid was just, it was 125 degrees or something outside.
You're lying.
No, it was incredibly
like
hot. Yes. It was one of the hottest days ever recorded, according to WhatsApp, which is not a reliable source. But, yeah. I mean, I think my mom and I just kind of cooked a lot that night and hung out and... My dad has Parkinson's, so we didn't leave the house. It was a really interesting Eid in that we just kind of stayed all together and people came to us.
That's kind of
nice. So people just came to visit. A bunch of people came and visited over Eid and the next 2 days.
That's beautiful.
So, yeah, it was actually really nice having people come in and keep my dad company and just kind of see the ways that my parents get cared for by their friends.
That's beautiful.
Which is hard for me to see when I'm in the U.S.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In my American Eid,
yeah.
I was in the burbs and I was at my dad's house. Here we go to all these different houses because aunties like will feed you at all the different houses. And I had an interesting experience with one particular auntie who like saw me after maybe like a year and was like, oh, you put on weight.
Oh my God.
It was so passive aggressive. But then I was like, oh, I get to talk about this in my material. So I'm just going to dig into this and see what else she has to say. And then she's like, oh, aren't you going to find someone soon? But then the great but also, like, terrible thing about this is that I was, like, ready, you know? I was ready to play this passive-aggressive game. So then when she asked me about my weight, I was like, oh, how's your son's weight? You know, I, like, did it in, like, a very subtle way.
Damn.
And then she said something about, like, how I need to be married. And I was like, oh, but, you know, both your daughters got divorced in their
20s. Oh,
and then
awesome.
she was just like, we got deeper and deeper into it. I just hate insulting, but, like, this is the auntie where I've, like, have been practicing with. And I'm just like, I wish there could be, like, an auntie improv where I could just learn how to, like, one up.
Yes.
And I think I won in the end because in the end she was just – because I kept trying to convince her that the reason why I'm single still is that men are trash and that I don't want to be with, like, in a bad relationship. And then at the end she's like, you know what? You're right. You don't want to be stuck in a bad relationship. And I was like, yes, I won this
yes.
match. I've never won a match before with an auntie. I felt so proud
of
myself.
You totally won.
Yeah,
you
totally won.
You won. Like,
she, like, conceded.
Yes. You won. She conceded. And what I'm really excited about is to hear, like, what kind of shit she talks to you now
oh,
about.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm ready.
If anything.
I know. I want to go to, like, UCB and do, like, an auntie improv practice so that I can be ready for the next Eid.
I love it. I think that we should set it up. We should have cardboard cutouts.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know.
We could use Mira Jacob. She has those amazing aunties in her book, Good Talk.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We can, like, blow those up and then, like, just kind of, like, get into a jousting match.
That's amazing. There's also a book called, I think it might just be called Aunties. Have
nice.
You seen this?
Uh-uh.
It's just, I have it. It's just a bunch of comics about different types of aunties. You know,
wonderful.
The passive-aggressive auntie, the open-minded auntie.
Did you have any?
The divorced auntie.
Did you have any auntie experiences?
So many auntie experiences. I mean, I met up with so many of my mom's friends. And, you know, they're not all kind. So a lot of them had also noticed that I'd gained weight. But they hadn't seen me in 20 years. Mm-hmm. So I basically just said, oh, yeah, I'm a woman now. You know, I just
was
like.
That's what I was saying. I was like, I'm older.
I'm
like,
not
that's
a child.
What happens.
Yeah. And they also asked a lot about my tattoos. So they were nothing like judgmental or anything, but just sort of like, how are you Muslim and have tattoos? And
that's
I said, well, I don't.
Silly.
I mean, I think like, I don't think there's a connection there.
Yeah. Also, I feel like in the olden times, from what I've research I've done, tattoos have existed in the world of brownness and the world of
absolutely.
Muslims.
Absolutely.
And so when people say this, I'm just kind of like, yeah, I would just wish that I had that kind of information to be like, well, actually, this is a part of your culture too.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, what's really funny is one of the women who asked me, I thought she was kind of being judgmental. And then she said, you know, but I've gotten my eyeliner. And she showed me her eyeliner and her lips. So I thought she had lipstick on. She was like, yeah, I just put it on over, but my lips are always red and my eyeliner is always on. And so she does these like permanent makeup tattoos.
That's a tattoo.
Yeah,
even
absolutely.
Even if it's like makeup.
Yeah. So that was really cool, like hearing from her about like the kinds of things that she you know, has tattooed. And
can we talk about your latest tattoo?
Yeah, it's based on the Borak, which is...
It's gorgeous.
Thank you.
I'm obsessed with it.
Thanks. Yeah, it was my Ramadan tattoo. I got it during Ramadan. And it's based on an image I'd seen of these kinds of magical creatures that exist in the Quran. It's the creature that the Prophet Muhammad alayhi salatu wasalam rode from Mecca to Jerusalem and traveled to the seven heavens on his way there. So, and this all happened in an instant. And so, like, as a Palestinian, that's really moving to me, the idea that you can just get to Jerusalem. I've never been able to visit Jerusalem as someone who has a Hawiya, you know, who's from the West Bank. And, yeah, she's also big. She's part animal, part peacock, part horse, part bird. She's fierce. So she's also, like, kind of queer in my assessment of her or my worship of her, I guess, or honoring of her.
I also love that lightning is referred to her.
Yeah.
Which I only found out this Ramadan because we both were at the iftar for the women's mosque.
Yeah.
And the woman at our table was talking about the Barak or the Barak. And she was like, was there lightning that was happening? And I was like, huh. And then she talked more about like how lightning is referred to in this narrative. Then I was just like, oh, wow. Because it moves as fast as lightning, right? Like,
yeah.
That's the,
yeah.
That's the,
exactly.
Thing. And I was like, oh my gosh, imagine if every time there's lightning, it's just these magical creatures flying
like
around.
Just flying around, just being like, I got you.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's very, very cool. The mystic kind of elements of Islam are.
Yeah, I felt like my Ramadan definitely jumped into that a lot more this year, which was a lot of fun. I had a reading with a Muslim medium. I basically went to her because I had a couple of fire experiences and I wanted to make sure that I had no jinns attached to me.
Yes.
She verified there are no jinns attached to me, but she also did confirm that both fire experiences that she saw a jinn causing, which is kind of weird.
Yeah.
Super weird. And then, you know, I got my ascension deck from her with all 99 names of Allah in it.
Yes.
And I've been using those. I use those during Ramadan. And then she gave me messages from my mom who passed away. And so just that experience, I feel like even just having these conversations with you this Ramadan has been really beautiful because I feel like so often I'm only exposed to very dogmatic versions of what it means to be Muslim. And my whole adult life has been really trying to explore the other aspects that I don't have exposure to. And I think, you know, I've been spending a lot of time like picking up crystals or like exploring different, I'm using air quotes, but like weird things in society. And knowing that there are those aspects in Islam has been really eye-opening to me because it means that I'm not really like straying away from Islam, but that there are magical, mystical, spiritual elements within Islam that kind of explore all this.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think as women, like talking about stuff like this and experiencing the feminine divine in different ways is not something that is accessible for us usually.
Yeah.
So hanging out with each other, talking about things that we don't usually talk about, you know, experiencing the names of God that are, I think, traditionally seen as masculine, even though God has no, right? God is like genderless.
Ungendered, yeah.
Yeah.
One of the beautiful things that you did for me this Ramadan was you read for me Surah Rahman in the feminized version. And then you sent me a voice memo of it because you've been working on this amazing project.
Yeah, I've been feminizing the Quran mostly for myself. So what I'm doing is just taking the he and all the feminine endings of Arabic words and turning them into the tamarbuta, which is the female version or feminine version of a word. So I don't remember what I was doing. I feel like I was nervous about something and then I decided, oh, I can read the Quran and record it and send it to you. And that would be a way for me to like recenter myself.
It was so beautiful. I think it was in Yosemite Valley. It was full moon night.
Yeah. I think that's what it was. And I was like, oh my God, it's the perfect night.
Yeah. And it's like full moon during Ramadan, which is beautiful. Yeah. Thank you for that.
Yay.
That was beautiful. We have to get into some serious topics.
Yeah.
I think we're going to war, maybe, possibly.
Yeah. I don't know. I think
Well, we're recording this on June 21st, and yesterday Trump tweeted that, because that's the only way our president communicates with anyone, he tweeted something about attacking Iran because a surveillance drone of some sort that had been flying overhead had been shot down. And then he was, like, ready to go to war immediately. And then I guess some people talked him down, and he decided not to. I'm not going to read his tweets. You can go look for it yourself. But it's really ridiculous. I think for me, one of the things that I keep reflecting on is we're 18 months until Election Day. Mm-hmm. And Trump knows that if he starts a war, he has a higher likelihood of staying in office for a second term or a third term. So when Trump announced his reelection rally, at the reelection rally, this was just like last week or something, he mentioned to the crowd, he's like, oh, don't you all want me for a third term? And then the crowd cheered. So I know we don't have three-term presidents, but I feel like Trump is trying to get the crowd excited to get him into a third term. He wants to change. He doesn't want to leave. He likes the power.
Absolutely. I mean, it's so good for business. for the entire family business, right?
I know.
Like, everyone's benefiting from it.
Oh, it's so terrible.
I mean, I think that seeing, you know, the inciting incident being that the U.S. was flying military aircraft, right? That surveillance drone. That's not cool.
We're not
supposed to. We don't like it when people, you know, cross borders and try to surveil on us, apparently, illegally and with drones. So why should another country take that kind of treatment/aggression? I mean, that is aggressive. So
totally aggressive.
But I mean, I think that Trump also has this thing where he loves wanting to look like a hero. So,
Absolutely. You
know, he like tried to do this shit with Korea, right?
Yeah.
Like he was like, we're going to war, and everybody freaked out and everybody was nervous. And then, you know, he's like, we're not going to war. I'm actually going to talk to them. So I don't know if we'd have it anymore, actually, but we've had a deal with Iran, right?
Yeah. The deal was from 3 years ago that President Obama put into place. And then Trump's just kind of been like undoing everything President Obama's put into place.
Yeah. I have a feeling, I mean, there are so many ways this could go. And one way could be him basically going back to that agreement and making it seem like it's his agreement, or making it seem like it's like an accomplishment he's made by not going to war, when really, like, there's nothing there. And I think, I mean, just being back in the Middle East now, when I grew up there in the 80s and late 70s, and seeing the ways that basically the war with Iraq has completely changed the entire area.
How?
In terms of, like, just consumer stuff, like being able to see tons of American franchises all over the place. That was not the case when I was growing up. There was one, maybe two fast food places you could go to in the Middle East. I think it was KFC and Hardee's. Like, that was it. And now it's like anything you can imagine. Starbucks, Caribou Coffee, acai bowls, all sorts of like nasty, just ridiculous money is being made. And I think that Iran is, you know, the only country left where we don't have military bases and we don't really have franchises. So I think they're just sort of like clamoring to get in there and conquer it.
Capitalist greed.
And it's disgusting. And I know that Iran isn't perfect, or their government isn't perfect or whatever, but no, this is not like, this shouldn't be acceptable.
Nope, definitely not. We also are in a time where I don't really have much to add here either, but there's uprising in Sudan, which we've talked about before.
Yeah.
Everyone's Instagram profiles are blue, that gorgeous blue that was designed by a Sudanese designer. I think he ended up passing away, but it's just been really beautiful to see that all over the place.
Yeah, and just seeing that the country is under internet, you know, blackout, mm-hmm. and there's no Wi-Fi, and knowing that people are being repressed every mm-hmm. minute. And then also not knowing how to help, I think, has been really hard because of all the weird sort of untrustworthy GoFundMes that have been popping up, and not knowing what's happening. I know that the U.S. has sent a new person, or has like figured out a new person that they're going to be State Department sending in to talk to the president and try to come up with something. But yeah, I think we've reached a point now where we don't really respond or do anything when there's genocide or murder or oppression or anything.
There's also
like that.
Uprising happening in Hong Kong right now,
mm-hmm.
And that's super urban. I think just worldwide, we're seeing people taking to the streets, and we have no way of watching it because everyone's like on media lockdown. And also, like, we live in a country where only if it's white people that are getting hurt that we hear about it. We're not hearing about all the other people of color countries.
Yeah, I think being out of the country for 3 weeks really just was eye-opening to see all the different news sources and to see that what's happening in Hong Kong is very much, you know, people just refusing to be okay with China's extradition laws mm-hmm. and having people basically just being thrown to the wolves, like having political prisoners being sent into China and then disappeared. So I think a lot of what's happening around the world is this issue of political prisons and repression. And Trump is just another sort of despot slash wannabe dictator whose family is like so deeply entrenched in world economies that it's kind of terrifying. Yeah.
So terrifying. I feel like we should go to a win.
Okay.
Let's go to a win.
Let's go to a win.
Let's go to a $4.1 million win.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish I knew how to do really good zarutas, like, for Dean Abedallah,
who won $4.1 million from the publishers of the Daily Stormer. I don't know if y'all remember this. I think we talked about it on our podcast earlier, but because he wrote something in an article that was anti-Trump, Daily Stormer responded and blamed Dean for the shooting that happened at the Ariana Grande concert that left 22 people dead in 2017. And, you know, he's a comedian. He has his own show. He's like a great speaker and journalist and is always like on the go for all these topics. So he worked with the Muslim Advocates and some other lawyer friends of ours on this lawsuit. And he got awarded $4.1 million.
Yeah, from the neo-Nazi.
Who's on the run and hiding now. So we don't actually know if he's going to actually get the money, the $4.1 million, because this guy's on the run.
Is it the guy who owns the Daily Stormer?
Mm-hmm. Andrew Anglin, who owns the Daily Stormer. He's a controversial editor. He's the one that's on the run, so no one can really find him. Dean said if he got this money, he would re-award it back to groups that work on anti-Muslim hate.
Right, exactly.
Which is beautiful.
Organizations that fight hate. He says the goal of the lawsuit, and this is from his Twitter, is to send a message to these Trump-loving white supremacists that they will not silence me or any of the people in the groups they hate, be they Black, Jewish, Muslim, LGBT, immigrant, etc. We will neither cower in fear nor stop speaking out.
Yes.
I think that's really great.
I think it's great, too.
Yeah. I mean, these sites have so much power, you know. They mm-hmm. can direct thousands of people to send you death threats, you know, dox you, scare you out of your living situation, whatever it is. So I think that this is a good move towards, you know, showing them that that kind of behavior
and hopefully
is punishable.
It shows legal precedence, too, that
yeah.
now that this has gone through, we can refer to this lawsuit whenever anything happens.
Absolutely.
I can't even count how many times I've wanted to do a lawsuit because of a smear campaign. And everyone's like, you're not going to win. But now, I mean, this is $4.1 million. I think that's like a pretty solid precedence.
Yeah, I agree.
We have another win.
Yeah.
I mean, both these wins happen on the same day. So I was actually having kind of a sad day about these wins because I just hate that we have to talk about Islamophobia on the daily like this. But Craig Hicks, he was the man that killed Deya, Yusor, and Razan in 2015 in the parking lot of the apartment complex. That trial happened on the same day that Dean's win happened. And he pleaded guilty to their murders, and he got 3 consecutive life sentences.
Good riddance.
Good riddance.
Bye.
Bye. It was good that he got the life sentences, I guess. But also, like, 2015 was a long time ago. That was 4 years ago. I don't understand why it took so long.
Mm-hmm.
But also when this happened, like, everyone was just saying it was a parking dispute. And one of the articles I read when doing research on this was that the police in North Carolina for that city, after this trial happened, they issued a written apology saying that they should never have said that it was a parking dispute, that it actually was because of the bias that he has. I guess the apology is nice, but also just don't do it. Like, acknowledge hate crimes when they're hate crimes.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's like, well, how can we tell if it is a hate crime? I think it's pretty clear.
It's so clear. This one was so clear.
And I think that, like, just looking at the metaphors here and just looking at how, you know, he's considered just a lone wolf who has anger issues and who just wanted his parking spot, you know. I think if we break it down, we see like, well, what is a parking spot? It's space. It's space that white supremacists feel belongs to them. They they believe that this land is theirs and theirs alone. And any space that you take up as a person of color, a marginalized person, anything that is not cis, hetero, you know, white person, that you're not, you know, you're basically asking for it. You shouldn't be taking up that space. And so, you know, like, I mean, I think that I'm not surprised that the entire global South has a parking dispute with the U.S. Like, they're just like, stop parking on our property. Stop parking on our land. Like, you've been, you have, we have bases everywhere. It's just like really gotten out of hand. So I think it's important to like look at this case as yet another instance of settler colonialism, or the idea that like, if you're being killed for a parking dispute, that's still, I mean, you can still see that as a hate crime, because it's absolutely like, why are you, you know, why is someone mad that you're taking up space?
One of the other interesting things I learned when doing research is that actually wasn't considered a hate crime, because under North Carolina law, hate crime statutes only apply to misdemeanor charges.
Which is hilarious.
I know. Right? It's like murders don't count as hate crimes, but misdemeanors do.
Yeah.
But what?
That makes so much sense, like considering who came up with that.
Right.
Right? Like, who are the federal prosecutors here? Like, who's coming up with the law? You know? Right. It's like the bully is coming up with the law. Yeah. So it's definitely not going to be actually just.
Oh, so unjust. So, I mean, I hope Dea, Yusor, and Razan find peace.
I do too.
The afterlife with this. Mashallah to Susan, Dea's older sister, who's been turned into this amazing advocate. She has an amazing talk up at TED Talk. Just watching the trial live that day was just heartbreaking. So, I mean, just sending a lot of love to that family and hope there's peace.
A lot of love and solidarity.
One last hot topic before we go to a break. It is Pride.
It is.
June is Pride. And everyone's having all these complicated feelings about it, mainly because capitalism has taken over Pride.
Yeah.
I feel like every business out there is trying to have rainbows being sold.
Yeah. Rainbow cupcakes.
Rainbow Postmates. Rainbow everything.
Rainbow parking tickets.
Rainbow parking tickets. Are there rainbow parking
no.
tickets?
No. I'm like, it's going to happen, I feel
it's
like.
Gonna it's going to happen.
Yeah.
But for people who are at the intersections of being queer and Muslim and looking for resources, Vigilant Love has an amazing page of resources out there. There's readings, there's visual media, there's social media, there's community organizations. So just go to the Vigilant Love LA Twitter thread and check it out. I think they did a really good job of finding fun readings and fun media.
I also noticed that Faye, that queer website, has some really good queer Muslim content.
Amazing.
Just over the last few months. And I think they're kind of trying to maybe aggregate it or whatever so that it's easier found. There's also, I mean, really cool not pinkwashing stuff happening. There's shows like Zara's, for example.
Yeah, Zara has talks about her queerness in her show very strongly this go.
And Rami El-Etrebi has a show this June, too, called The Ride in Los Angeles at Hollywood Fringe that explores his gayness and queerness as a Muslim.
And you were in a book that just came out that has a lot of queer poetry in it.
Yeah, Halal If You Hear Me. It's only women, femmes, and non-binary folks that are Muslim and mostly queer. So it's a beautiful collection.
It's gorgeous. I read it over Ramadan. It was very inspiring.
Yeah, it is. So that one is, again, Halal If You Hear Me, and the editors are Fatih Asghar and Safiya Al-Helu.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, I still think of June as Pride Month, obviously, and I'm excited, but I've never been to a Pride rally or anything like that, because there's always going to be cops there, which I think is disgusting. And a lot of it has also become very commercial, as you said. Lots of, like, big corporations hosting events. And all of that becomes really problematic. So I'm hoping at some point this June I can go to some sort of kink party with queers or something and celebrate that way. But it was definitely weird being in the Middle East during Pride Month and, like, you know, just hearing people being casually homophobic and just trying to say to them, hey, that's not
cool.
Kind. That's not something a kind person would say. You want to, like, really revisit that.
Did you connect with the queer community in Kuwait?
I did not. I had a couple of people email or Insta message me saying, oh, you're in Kuwait. You know, this is awesome. And I know that they're, I know that they're queer. But I wasn't able to really connect with people, even though, I mean, I can tell that the Middle East is just so queer in general. There's so much repression and there's so much under the surface that everyone... I was three times hornier than usual just being there. And I'm usually really horny. So it was like, what is happening? I had so many dirty dreams.
It's that repression, man.
Yeah. Things that I just don't have here. Yeah. You know, I don't have – I barely have dirty dreams in the U.S. I had a dream I went on like a cute date with a gamer last night. Like literally, we didn't even kiss.
Because it was a gamer.
Yeah, because I'm back in the U.S. No, it was a gamer of color. They were really cute. But yeah, I mean, I just think it's a really complicated relationship, like being of a place that where there's a lot of erasure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And with that, let's take a break.
Hi, this is Rage.
Hi, this is Tanu.
And you're listening to Bad Brown Aunties. This is a podcast about art, culture, politics, and legacy through the lens of the brilliant people of color and queer, trans, gender non-conforming members of our community.
In each episode, we pick an artist, activist, writer, or cultural worker to talk about their lives, work, and who inspired them to be who they are, with a special nod to the aunties and elders that have shaped them.
I feel like so many times people associate aunties with a particular kind of straight cis womanhood. And I actually feel like so many of us as queer and trans people have found ways to create kinship outside of our families of origin.
I have a lot of aunties, biological aunties. And then I have the non-biological aunties that really raised me.
Aunties seem to be a sort of cross-cultural experience amongst different communities of color, although the tropes might be different.
Generally speaking, though, they seem to have special cultural significance as powerful truth-tellers and sometimes shit-talkers.
My aunties are the ones who, like, cut me down and build me up.
I find it really powerful, the work that aunties do for each other, to survive, to share knowledge, to feed each other, to survive patriarchy. Basically.
So, Tanu and I met on our first day in the United States at Logan Airport in Boston.
That was August 2003, over 15 years ago.
Through this time, we fought, laughed, traveled together.
We've protested together, and we've spent time with each other's families.
And true story, one of us even shoved a tampon up the other.
Oh my God, that really did happen.
I'm sorry. Okay. Because the two of us have known each other for such a long time, one of the things we do that makes people roll their eyes is that we tell the same stories over and over again.
Yeah, we're basically becoming those aunties who are always saying things like, remember back in the day when that thing happened?
While we promise to spare you the repetitive storytelling,
we're sure you'll learn a bunch from these joyful political conversations.
You know, aunties aren't stupid.
We're so excited about you joining us for our first season this summer.
Rate and subscribe to our podcast and follow us on social media at Bad Brown Aunties. Every episode also comes with a blog post, including playlists, reading lists, photographs, and links to articles about our guests and other fun tidbits. Check those out at badbrownaunties.com.
And we're back.
Woo woo!
Rhonda is still here.
Yes.
Rhonda is still our guest.
Let us explore some creeping Sharia.
Creeping Sharia. My Creeping Sharia is based on this amazing movie that just came out on Netflix.
So good.
With Randall Park and Ali Wong. I'm so excited to see a rom-com. I love rom-coms. I'm so excited to see a rom-com with two people of color, which never happens. And it's Randall Park and Ali Wong. And they're so funny.
Always be my baby.
And in this movie, which has a lot of Keanu Reeves, she has Randall Park, Keanu Reeves, and Daniel Dae Kim. And it's just kind of amazing that there are no white guys in it.
Oh, thank God. I was so nervous. I was like, oh, no.
Every step of the way, I was like, oh, we're just not even going to, like, center in any kind of way a white narrative. Beautiful. Like, there's no white best friend.
No.
No there's white person
queer,
on the band.
There's queer best friends,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And there's nothing. I actually can't remember one white character in that movie.
Yeah,
right?
I think they're irrelevant.
Yeah,
they're not.
They're irrelevant.
They're irrelevant. They're just not part of
Which
the narrative at
how
all.
How I exist in this world. Like,
absolutely.
In my documentary of my life, I rarely see white people.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think it's surprising for white people to know that that's a thing. Anyways, in this movie, Daniel Dae Kim, who plays the first love interest, he goes to India where he's making breakfast for Padma Lakshmi.
Oh, my God. And Instagramming it.
Yeah. And there's this, like, scene where Ali Wong's character is talking to him, and he's in India, and he's wearing a white kurta. And he looked so hot in it.
Mm. He looked so hot.
I was just like, man, I didn't ever fantasize of Daniel Day-Kim wearing a white kurta before, but now that I've seen it.
You can't unsee it, and you don't want to.
I don't want to unsee it. Mm. I want to see, like.
That's some Spank Bank material.
It really was. I feel like I need to go watch that movie again.
Yeah.
So good.
It was so good.
What is it about, like, the white salwar? I don't know. I mean, like, I know I don't, like, date white guys anymore, but even when, like, I had a white boyfriend and he was wearing the salwar kameez, the, like, the kurta top, it was still really hot. I just think that kurta tops are really hot.
They are really hot. I remember last Eid, one of my boos came over wearing one, and I was not planning to continue seeing him, but then he showed up in his kurta, and I was like, fuck!
Oh, so hot!
What am I supposed to do now? Yeah. Ugh,
so hot.
Yeah, it's just, it makes you melt.
Yeah. I guess now you know our interests.
Yeah. Kryptonite.
What's your creeping Sharia?
My creeping Sharia is that Rihanna might be, or Rihanna, as she pronounces it. Rihanna might be or is Muslim?
Maybe she's secretly Muslim. Yeah. She took the Shahada and we just don't know about it.
Yeah. I mean, it's something you can definitely keep secret, right? I mean.
Well, she's dating this billionaire.
Yes.
The Saudi billionaire.
Hassan Jameel.
For 2 years. And apparently on Eid, she was spotted with his family on Eid day in Italy. Like they were like in some Italian party or something. And so I was just like, obviously she's celebrating Eid.
Oh, yeah.
She's one of ours.
She is one of ours.
Claiming her. Claiming her.
She could also, I mean, honestly, she could also just be dating a Muslim guy. I mean, one of the things about Islam is, like, you can, if you're a guy, you know, marry eventually a woman who's not Muslim.
I know.
So it's, like, one of those rules that.
So gendered.
Are obviously, like, oh, but I can. You can't, but I can.
Yeah.
So, you know, Janet Jackson did this a little bit, right? She was, like, dating a Saudi dude.
And then she got divorced but made her money.
Yeah. And then there's, you know, there's, like, I mean, you can date a Muslim guy and not be Muslim. So that's one of the things that's kind of like.
I still want to claim her.
I mean, I think we still should. Also, like, just more power to her.
That's true.
She's with an Arab dude. They are fucking difficult as fuck. I don't give a fuck, like, how much money he has or how charming he is or how cute he is. The fact that she has endured him for 2 years.
2 years.
Okay, wait. I'm looking at a picture. He's extremely attractive.
He's very, very handsome.
So he better be also extremely charming. You know what? I want to know how Drake feels about Rihanna being Muslim. He's like, you. You wouldn't date me, but you're going to wear a burqa for Hassan Jameel. Why you got to do it like this?
I
can see
Drake.
Him just singing about this and crying. It's like it's almost cancer season, right?
It is cancer season. It is my season.
People are crying. You're going to cry.
You're going to cry this one. It's been too long of not crying.
You know what? It might be just knowing that Rihanna is Muslim will help you finally just be like an icon among us.
I feel it on the edge of my eyes a little bit.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is solid creeping Sharia. I think you know how this works. Okay, awkward ask. My awkward ask is that after Ramadan, I decided I needed to date again because I haven't. It's been a while. I'm not going to say how long it's been, but it's been a very long time.
That's what Ramadan does.
I know. Ramadan just I was like, oh, next Ramadan, I want to be with someone. And
you're
share.
Like, what else am I being deprived of?
I know,
of?
Everything. And then I was like, I was ready. And then I opened up my Tinder app, and it said, you are banned.
Banned.
It was this gray thing. And then, it just said the, banned sign. And then there's no links or anything, so there's no explanation of why I was banned. And I don't know how long I had been banned, because I hadn't been on the app in months. And then I, did some research. And once you're banned on Tinder, you're banned for 25 years. It's, a lifetime ban. And I was just like, I really hope I'm not single
so
in 25 years.
The world will be over by the time you can.
I was just like, it's a lifetime ban. Then I was just, I wasn't putting it on social media because I was a little nervous to put it out there. So I, emailed them. I found an email. I emailed them. And then I had a friend that used to work at Tinder, and I like DM'd her. I was like, what's up with this? Then finally I put it up on Twitter. And then on Twitter, I had a friend whose husband worked there. And then he was able to like send me a different link. Anyways, I had to do all this back end work, and finally I got back into my Tinder profile. So I was unbanned. I got an email that's like, oh, you got your account back. And then I was like really trying to figure out what I could have done to have deserved a ban, because they didn't tell me. And I was reading my profile, and I literally have such a basic profile with nothing controversial in it. The only thing controversial in it is that I said, and I wrote this, semicolon, and I linked to the article where I say, I don't date white guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even say in my profile that I don't date white guys. I just link. I just have the hyperlink there.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. That was what got me
banned. That's all you need. And then it was like, oh, it's time for a super fragile person, probably, right, to click on report. They probably reported you. They
probably.
And they probably said you were racist.
Yeah. Right?
White guys think that you could be racist against them just because you don't want to date them.
I didn't even say I don't want to date them. I just said I wrote this.
Because
I think in previous versions of this profile, I've said I don't date white guys. But I've gotten to the point where I've been so whitewashed, I guess. Like, I've been so, like, conditioned to, like, make myself amenable to men.
Right, yeah.
That I've just, like, toned down everything about me.
Mm-hmm.
Except
mm-hmm.
for the link.
Right.
Which makes me really upset, too, because I don't want to present a toned down version of myself to whoever I end up dating. Because I'm a lot. And I don't want it to be a surprise to whoever I'm dating later on.
I love that that's your reason. Yeah. And also, like, women are so constantly, you know, conditioned and asked to make ourselves smaller, to make our lives smaller, our ego smaller, our dreams, everything.
For a man.
Yeah. And it's really not. It's just to accommodate patriarchy. It's to accommodate white supremacy and to, like I said, it's like the parking spot, right? We're not, I'm not supposed to be taking up any space.
You know, it's not even, for me, it's not even about being on these apps, because I really do hate the apps, I've decided.
They're the worst.
They're the worst. And I'm never going to go back to Tinder, because obviously an app that took the side of racist over my side, and then I had to come, you know, advocate to come back to it. I think that's very problematic. And there's all these people that came out of the woodworks after this happened that were like, oh, yeah, my profile got banned, too, because I said I don't date white guys or whatever, like, what for whatever reasons. And I'm just like, I don't want to have to, like, dig through Tinder profiles to be subjugated to racism. Like, it's such a microaggression.
Yeah. I mean, I think what you're meant to do is just swipe left on white guys, right?
Yeah.
But it's like, why can't you also state your preference?
Yeah. White guys always state, like, I like blonde girls.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No femmes, no fats.
Yeah.
What gay white men have used constantly on apps. So, I mean, I think that it is possibly a divine sign.
I hope it's a divine sign.
Just a lot saying to you, girl.
Girl.
Tinder's not where it's going to be at.
I definitely believe that at this point, because I'm not going back. The only reason why I haven't canceled it completely is because I want to write about this experience.
Absolutely, and you should.
And then I'll cancel it after that.
I need to be banned from Tinder. I feel like it's like,
I know.
I just need someone to just keep me away from all of these genitalia. Like, I am just constantly having sex, and it needs to just slow down.
That's why I went back into these apps. I was inspired by you. I was like, oh. Run this my inspiration to, like, try these apps again. And I'm just like, oh, this is racism.
Have you tried Muzmatch or, like, Minder or anything?
I tried Minder a long time ago. And, man, there was, like, one guy on one of those apps where he was, like, so halal he didn't believe in beds because he slept on the floor.
Oh, my God. Like the prophet did?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, I don't know if I'm Muslim enough for this site.
That guy is, like, hardcore kinky. He's like, we need to be in pain when we're sleeping.
Right. Yeah, on the floor.
It wasn't really on the floor. I mean, the prophet slept on, like, a...
I don't know. This guy didn't believe in beds.
Wow.
And put it in his profile.
I don't believe in beds.
And I was like, I don't know about this one. I mean, I'll give it another shot, but it's also... I don't know. You might get this, too. I feel like people know me a little bit too much now.
Yeah.
So when I'm on these Muslim sites, like, they actually know who I am. And I'm just like, I don't like being such a public figure on these
sites. Well, I saw someone posted Rami Yusuf's Muzmatch profile. And they were like, I don't know if this is real, but I feel like it's a fun experiment to just do. I have a profile I don't have a photo on. And I just kind of want to see, like, how confident people are that they're going to find someone to marry within, you know, 1 to 2 years.
I'll do it. I'll go back. There's a new one out there that people have sent my way after all this Tinder stuff happened. I'll send it to you. We can make a fun little experiment, summer experiment out of it.
I think it would be really fun.
I think it'd be fun to get at least a story out of it.
I want a wife. I'm not here for stories. Just kidding. I have commitment phobia.
You're also a storyteller.
Yeah. My awkward ask was in the Middle East, maybe like happened every single day, every other day. It was just people asking, you know, like, why did you get divorced and all of this. But my favorite was a friend of the family's came over. He hadn't seen me in 20 years. And, you know, we talked and everything. And then after a little while, he said, I have a question, but it's a bit touchy.
Don't ask it. Don't do it. You have to frame it that way. Don't do it.
And my dad jumped in and said, oh, if it's a touchy question, better not to ask. No, touchy, Lala. No, don't ask.
Lala.
And it was kind of amazing having my dad for a moment have my back about something like that. But of course, the person asking was a man.
Of course.
So he continued.
Of course.
And he framed it like, so your obesity.
No!
Is it related?
No!
Is it related to overeating or an illness?
No!
And the entire time,
no.
I was thinking, like, he has not aged well. He, you know, I hadn't seen him in 20 years. He was wrinkly.
This is where the auntie jousting match comes in handy.
Yeah. And I was like, wow, like, I actually don't have to diss him.
Yeah.
Because he basically has announced his ability to literally see that my body has gotten larger. Like, that's not something that takes a lot of effort. So I was just like, I just told him it was both. I was like, yeah, it's illness and overeating. And, you know, it's stress because there's a lot of stupidity in the world.
How did he respond to that?
He didn't really get a chance to respond because my dad was like, yes, yes, stress, stupidity.
I love it. I love that your dad's a cheerleader like this.
Yeah. My dad's like, no one can call my daughters fat except me.
That's amazing. I mean, but also not amazing.
I am the
also
only one who can call them fat. Get away.
Why are your dads like that?
Because they think they own your body. It's really sad.
Yeah. because when that auntie said stuff about me, my dad was really offended that this auntie said it. But, like, my dad says stuff all the time. But
yeah.
It's okay for him to say it.
No, of course. It's okay
but,
for
like,
him.
not other people.
But it kind of makes sense. Like, I think my dad is sweet. But he's also, like, an asshole.
Yeah.
But if someone else calls my dad an asshole,
yeah,
I'm like, hey.
No.
No. Mm-hmm. So I think it might be connected to that.
Well, welcome back to the U.S. where you don't have to deal.
Not as much,
with
thank
those
God.
Kind of uncles.
Yeah. Not as much.
Fatwas. Have you ever declared a fatwa before?
I've never declared a fatwa.
This is your opportunity.
I want to declare.
We've given you the power here on the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast.
Now I want to declare fatwas on uncles, but I feel like the real fatwa should go to Borders.
What about Borders?
I just am disgusted by these arbitrary borders that were drawn up by hegemonic imperial forces, mostly Western. If I know that Western is a construct, but they're just disgusting. And, you know, traveling, being abroad, and seeing the ways that, you know, my body was able to travel without questioning until I got back to empire. So everything was cool in Portugal, in the Middle East, and everywhere I went. And then I got to England and I got questioned by just like an airline employee about how I found out about where I was going to stay in Portugal after I had been in Kuwait. And what did I do? You know, what were my days like there? And then coming back to the U.S. and standing in line, right, to like go through immigration, just how even in that most privileged problem type way, it was still extremely obvious, like who's you know,
allowed
bodies are allowed in a space and who's not. So now that all of this bullshit is happening on our own border, I mean, not that it didn't used to.
Yeah.
And having this kind of like conversation around, are they concentration camps? Are they this? Are they that?
Yeah. I mean, they're obviously concentration camps.
Yeah. They're camps and there's concentrations of people in them. Yeah. And people are dying.
And when you look at the things that have been coming up this week around this idea of concentration camps at the borders is people are pulling up old papers. In the 1930s, when these camps were being made, when you look at the newspaper and the press from that time, they don't call them concentration camps. They just say there's gatherings of alien people, or because I think alien was used in the language back then. And it just, you could have just copycatted whatever's in our press today to be whatever's in the press back then.
Yeah.
We only named them concentration camps and Holocaust after the incident was over.
Yeah. And there's also, I mean, the fact that we had internment camps here, mm-hmm. and that we continue to have reservations and other ways that we allow or not allow indigenous peoples to be on their own land. So I think that it's not unheard of that our country engages in
concentration camps.
Yeah.
One of the other things that's been happening is that a lot of these places that used to house the Japanese internment camps are now being used to house the refugees now. And there's a big protest actually happening in Oklahoma at Fort Sill, which is a detention center, and is being protested by Japanese American activists to say that this was where we were put in place and this is where we were incarcerated, and we shouldn't be using the same space to keep other people in detention.
Absolutely. I know that when I lived in Fresno, the Fresno Fairgrounds and other spaces had been used during internment as holding spaces and literal camps for Japanese Americans. I think that, yeah, I think we should all be protesting.
We should all be protesting.
It's disgusting, yeah. The prison industrial system generally in this country is nauseatingly gross.
If you're in LA, the protest here is going to be in Little Tokyo on the 27th. So get yourself out there.
Absolutely.
If you want to protest.
And just spread the word. Like, just let people know at your job or in your family about our history. You know, like, I mean, there are ways that you can do it that are subtle.
Or not so subtle.
Or not so subtle, you know? But yeah, I think that not a lot of people know about this. So it's important.
Let's get a Good Muslim Award. I have a Good Muslim Award to give. I want to give my Good Muslim Award to the people behind this movie that I just watched. It's called The Feeling of Being Watched, produced by Asia Bandawi. I just watched it this week, and it's amazing and heartbreaking and just really confirmed a lot of my paranoia. What she ends up doing in this documentary is she's in this, I think her background is from the Maghreb region, and she grew up in this town in Illinois, which had a high population of Arab Americans. And the neighborhood was on hyper watch because of this like high concentration since pre-September 11th. So she wanted to do a documentary where she kind of like dissected all of this out about her community. And she ends up really putting the camera on herself and dissecting her experience growing up in this community and her experience being surveilled and watched and how her family was being watched by the FBI. So she does a FOIA request, which is how you get the Freedom of Information Act request on her family to try to, you know, make this movie. And she's denied and denied until she gets to the point where they finally say that they have 33,000 pages of documents that have her family's names in it. And you're just like, what?
Wow.
At the surface level, the movie kind of is about her going about this very legal process of getting the FOIA paperwork from the government. But it also is so much about how we have this, quote, paranoia of the government watching us. And in her dissection in this movie, it's actually fact. Like, she's able to document that the government is actually watching us.
Absolutely.
And it was very scary, but it was also just beautifully done. And I highly recommend everyone to go watch it. If you can't watch it this weekend in the theater, I think it's in LA for a limited run. It should be on PBS this fall. So just keep an eye out. I'll mention it on the podcast before it comes out. But Asia, great job.
Awesome. I can't wait to see it.
I can't wait for you to watch it too. I want to talk to you about it after.
I might
afterwards.
Go see it tonight. I might go see it tonight. That's a good idea. My Good Muslim Award goes to Fatoumata Camara, a young Black Muslim woman who was attacked in the Bronx by some teenagers while she was on a bus. They followed her as she got off the bus, and one snatched her purse from her. Ugh. One attacked her and broke her nose. They also pulled off her hijab. So lots of violence there. And of course, the NYPD's response to this was that there was no evidence of this happening.
Lies.
So the reason that I want to give this award to Fatoumata is because she went and investigated this herself. So she, like Asia Bendawi, went looking to find out whether, you know, this all had happened in her head or if it was actually real.
Yeah.
And she just basically approached the vendors who had cameras.
Right, because we have cameras everywhere
the bus,
now.
Yeah, by the bus stop. And so, yeah, two of them gave her their footage.
Amazing.
And she forwarded that to the NYPD, which had, you know, their response was, oh, we hadn't previously been aware of this. And it's like, that's actually what investigating is. You're supposed to go find out. But, of course, like, she did their job for them, which is, like, basically, like, an entire poem about Black womanhood in America, I think.
Yeah.
And they ended up moving forward with the investigation. So
did they get caught?
I'm not sure. I know that there's a rally, or there was a rally in the Bronx to support her.
I feel like she should use the same lawyers Dean used.
Yeah.
And, like, sue the NYPD.
Oh, yeah. I agree. The NYPD has obviously not done their job here.
Absolutely irresponsible.
To the point where, yeah, I mean, and it's like purposeful, right?
Yeah.
Like you just basically erase everyone's experiences, or you say that they were lying, or you do no labor to actually protect or to serve. So.
Well, good on Fatoumata. I mean, I'm sad this happened to her, but I'm so proud of her
for
doing this work to protect herself.
Same here.
Very worthy of a Good Muslim Award.
Absolutely.
And that's the end of our show, y'all.
Partay.
That is it. Thank you so much for being here, Rhonda. It's
Thank
such
you
a
for
joy
having
to have you.
It was really
on
fun.
Our show.
Yeah.
Where can people find you?
You can find me at Rhonda Gerard everywhere. Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. I'm not really on as much, but RhondaGerard.com. You can also go to the beautiful internet and plug in my name, and a lot of stuff comes up that is
haram.
Yeah, haram. So
and you have a book coming out soon?
I have a book coming out next year with Catapult. It is a book of nonfiction. It's called Love is an Ex-Country.
Oh, love it. I love that title. I
Thank
can't
you.
Wait to read it. I'm such a fan of yours, as you Aww. Obviously know. I'm so excited to have you on our show.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. And to just be friends and be able to hang out and be badass Muslim women together.
And we definitely miss Zara.
Zara! She's
Zara,
rocking it.
You.
Rocking it up in the Bay.
But I feel like you were a good replacement for Zara.
I'm glad. It's a lot. It's big shoes.
Big shoes.
Yes.
Big shoes. Thanks, y'all. Kadafis.
Thanks for listening to the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast, hosted by Taz Ahmed and Zara Nourmash. You can follow Taz on Twitter at TazzyStar, that's TAZZYSTAR, and Zara at Zara Comedy, that's ZAHRA Comedy. The show is produced and edited by Quincy Sarasmith, and you can find us on the web at GoodMuslimBadMuslim.com. To follow the conversation, please use the hashtag GoodMuslimBadMuslim. Good Muslim, Bad Muslim is recorded at the Potluck Podcast Studio, located at Visual Communications. Visual Communications develops and supports the voices of Asian American and Pacific Islander media artists who empower communities and challenge perspectives. Some of their annual programs include the Academy Award qualifying Los Angeles Asian Pacific Film Festival, the Armed with a Camera Fellowship, and C3, the Conference for Creative Content. Learn more at bconline.org. Good Muslim, Bad Muslim is a proud member of Potluck, a collective that features stories and voices from the Asian American community.
But we're still here and we're going strong.
It's an exciting time in Asian America. There are more movies, TV shows, books, and music reflecting us than ever. But all of these represent just a small slice of Asian American culture and experiences. So what do? Tell more slices. Asian Americana is a show that explores these slices of distinctly Asian American culture and history. We've talked about how Chinese Americans built California's Sacramento Delta, the art scene turned gallery institution Giant Robot, a play that explores the lost Cambodian pop music of the 60s and 70s, and, of course, Boba, just to name a few stories. You can find Asian Americana at AsianAmericana.com or on your podcast app. And we're getting tired of
proving we belong. If it's a touchy question, better not to ask.